We have Brian back from Toronto, Mini Max. He's been doing all kinds of things, but he did get focused back on the archives at the University of Toronto Library, Fort Robarts. What is it, Fort Book? We call it Fort Book, Fort Robarts. Robarts. What's it called, Brian? What's the name of that place?
It's officially called Robarts Library, but...
What's the part you
go to? The Fisher Rare Book Library.
Right, Fisher Rare Book. Okay, so you begin. You have some things that you're enthusiastic about. Let's hear that.
Yeah, it's all about one of the things McLuhan is known for is the prophecy, right? And at least in large-scale terms, if not specific. But there's an interesting example in Education Automation, Buckminster Fuller's book, Education Automation. There's a very strong instance of Fuller predicting the Internet in a somewhat more direct way than McLuhan is kind of sometimes known for predicting the Internet. And McLuhan underlines the phrase, but there's no note, there's no other indication that he saw the potential of that really fundamental idea, but it's just interesting that way. There's a couple of other notes that are interesting enough, but the thing I'm talking about is the phrase two-way TV.
Yes.
And McLuhan underlines this phrase. This is on the same page as I mentioned before once where McLuhan had written learn a living beside earn a living.
Yes.
Wasn't sure if maybe he came up with that phrase, but...
Anyway, I'm not sure either. He certainly popularized. He used it in Understanding Media. He was the first to really put it out there, learn a living. He may have come up with it. Yes, I have Education Automation by Bucky Fuller, and I'm aware of the two-way TV thing. And it is interesting to try to make a distinction between what he's saying and the Internet. The Internet is like a combination of both, two-way TV and McLuhan's. You get the library to send you whatever materials you dialed up, is how he predicted it in 1966. But remember, McLuhan never wanted to be known for someone predicting particular technologies. He wanted people to recognize what the new technology would do on other technologies that already existed. That's the missing part of media ecology that nobody gets. And Americans, being techno lovers, gadget lovers, they don't care about that part. They're just amazed that McLuhan seemed to predict the Internet, and they go nowheres with McLuhan. But they'll celebrate him for that reason.
Yeah. It's like a useful attention grabber, but most people have a hard time really conceiving of the possible benefit. Really, it's
right,
you know, and as much time explaining why you should selfishly, for your own self interest, get into McLuhan just to understand.
Yeah, what's happened to your past? What your grandchildren knew. Now, Bucky Fuller is more popular back then than McLuhan because he was an American and he was a techno gadget lover and talked on that level. But if you go back and read his epic poem, 1939 or so, epic poem, Industrialization, he does understand the medium is the message, sort of, from an efficient causality level. But Bucky Fuller, McLuhan always, you know, tipped his hat to Bucky. He was pretty good for an American, and within that bias, he was pretty prophetic in his early writings.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you seen anything else that McLuhan talked about in Bucky in the book, sir?
He underlines the phrase airplane as a weapon,
mm-hmm.
where Fuller is talking about how what ends up being that killingry is where the real innovation and money goes, and then the livingry is an accidental byproduct.
Yes,
there's a big theme in Education Automation is about these effects happening unconsciously, that they are the just what happens in the aggregate of everybody mindlessly pursuing a new technology. These other effects happen, and that part McLuhan definitely picks up on.
Let me say this. So, Bucky Fuller wants people to emphasize livingry rather than weaponry. Now, he's talking about inefficient causality. Now, what's important is that McLuhan points out and predicts the effects of the leisure society and why people will move into emphasizing the livinry and lose interest in the moon shots of the late 60s, early 70s, and lose interest in technical development and want to just start getting stoned in whatever form they come up with. That's livinry as yes. McLuhan would see it, not Bucky Fuller's way. Bucky would miss that.
Right. Yes, that is a good point, actually. That is what McLuhan ultimately sort of dismissively would say about Fuller, is that ultimately there's a hardware limitation there and a lack of understanding of the software benefits.
In my notes, I have McLuhan commenting on Bucky, one-pager that Andrew Crystal got for me from the archives in Ottawa. He says that Bucky Fuller is completely a 19th-century mind, but he overlays a primitive retrieval, a primitive sensibility, like the dome, the igloo effect of his dome. So actually in the 19th century, there was the beginning with the symbolists and the occult revival, a bit of primitive retrieval happening due to the electric telegraph. And Bucky Fuller rode on that level of retrieval of that complementary part of the 19th century, and McLuhan acknowledges that, but he says Bucky had no clue why he was doing that or how. And so McLuhan always is pointing out that Freud is obsolete and McLuhan has tapped into the deeper unconscious. That's what's really incredible about McLuhan. No one even realizes that he's knocked out Freud, Jung, and Foucault, and everybody with a technical explanation of what our collective unconscious was manifested in each mm-hmm. medium environment. And Bucky Fuller, you know, when he had a press conference with McLuhan in 1971 at McLuhan's coach house, Robert Fulford reported that he was there and attended. He said they both talked, not necessarily at the same time, but they did not address what each other was talking about. They were both, what William Irwin Thompson got pissed off about, they were both autistic, it appeared. And they did both talk their own scene. And yet it didn't interrupt their friendship.
Right, yeah.
So they give us another quote.
There was a distance respect there or something.
Yeah.
One part that seems important that McLuhan appreciates, Fuller talking about now how did the arms race improve everything else because of the nature, and he's saying ultimately it's because of the nature of the development of ships. Fuller says, as we went from the ships of the sea to the ships of the air, the performance per pound of the equipment and fuel became of even higher importance than on the sea. And then McLuhan, beside this, he underlines performance per pound. McLuhan writes, note awareness of hardware toward information form of age of automation.
Right, that hardware is going towards the form of software.
Yeah, because the performance per pound and the knowledge of what you do to the hardware is far more important than coming up with the new hardware, in a way.
Right, right. And Fuller, he did say we're technically doing more and more with less and less, the etherealization principle. I think he came up with that. And McLuhan used that, but a lot further than Fuller. Now, Fuller says in some interview, he says, McLuhan's an interesting guy. Fuller will say, he got the idea of the media were extensions of our senses from me. That's what Fuller would say. He says, but I've seen McLuhan in performances, dealing with audiences, and he's very hard to pin down. He's very clever, very good at evading the audience. As they start to get pissed off at what he's saying, they start going after him, and he says they can't catch McLuhan. So he saw McLuhan as a trickster, a verbal trickster, more than applied to Fuller's world.
Right. Yeah. When there's some quote where Fuller's praising McLuhan and he's drawing a clear distinction, like, he is a literary critic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's an English professor. And as far as that goes, I really like him. But there's this very kind of, let's not talk too much about McLuhan.
No. And
I got real problems to solve.
Yeah, and what Fuller didn't recognize is that James Joyce said that he was the greatest engineer that ever lived, and McLuhan applied that. Fuller did not see that McLuhan was invading the engineering world. In his drunken moments said that Lucifer was the god of the engineers. He said it was a satanic cult, the engineering faculty.
Right. Well, yeah, and a claim of engineering that way, I'm the greatest engineer from Joyce.
Yeah.
Well, if there's any truth to that, that would mean there are things that you can get and apply from that. Like you're talking about, you're applying a technology that is kind of user indifferent. You don't need to be only the singular Joyce genius can operate this technology. Like, no, if it's a technology. Well, the best, the most, to my mind, he wasn't directly talking about Fuller, I don't think. He might have mentioned him, but the most Fuller applicable quote in all of McLuhan to me is from somewhere in Cliché to Archetype. He draws, I don't know the exact words, but he draws the strict, like there's an exact analogical identity between a cliché in the sense of a cliché model of a motor and a cliché turn of phrase. That using, just continuing to ditto the same design model over and over again, you know, you end up losing possibilities. You shouldn't get, you know, the idea of engineering the language as well as engineering that language being a technology, having a total analogy to engineering new, more useful language.
So you're saying that the engineering of the motor is parallel in its effect as the engineering of words?
Right. Well, McLuhan was saying it's like a cliche applies exactly the same to the world of physical hardware engineering that way as it does to the world of language and understanding. That a cliche idea is just as numbing and, in a way as a cliche motor vehicle technology.
Right. So McLuhan would say that the printing press led to the dominance of engineering without studying the effects. In the 19th century, it was all about progress, progress, damn the torpedoes, no matter what happens. And McLuhan says the vortices bring back knowing that language was engineering, but they were engineers that wanted to study the effects of what they're doing. And that proved to be, from McLuhan's point of view, more valuable than the glorious dreams of Bucky Fuller. Because in Take Today, he takes a couple of pages to mock Bucky Fuller. He says,
right,
Bucky Fuller,
it's only mocking in there.
Right. And he says, Bucky Fuller is, and this would be written right around the time he did the press conference in 1971, because the book comes out in 72. He says that Bucky Fuller, a wonderful person, and if he was allowed to manage the global theater, his generosity and ebullience and that, he probably could pull it off. But then McLuhan says, but unfortunately, humans have obsessions and desires and neuroses, and they get in the way of any, you know, enlightened manager. So he says Bucky Fuller is doomed to a utopian dream and miss the present, miss what was really going on, because he actually was such a good guy, he like the humanist ideal, that he was so generous and nice and loving that he, if humans weren't human, he'd be a great global manager. But unfortunately, humans have original sin. And what McLuhan meant, not the Catholic meaning of original sin was the refusal to study the effects of your own expressions, including what you invent. That's what McLuhan
says. Is a, that's very crafty. I certainly never thought a lot. If I never heard, I never thought a lot about this idea of original sin being so explicitly McLuhan-esque.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's a very.
Wow.
It's probably the correct definition. He used to say, you know, all these people would ignore what he was saying. He would say they were suffering original sin, the natural human instinct to ignore what's going on, not a moral judgment about what they do, but to ignore the effects. They don't study their self-reflexive situation.
That's interesting, because you could infer. I'm realizing that, you know, from his public utterances, anyway, at least his well-known ones, he doesn't come out and say connected to original sin. You know, he generally keeps the religion out of it. But you could infer that from when he talks about, like, what's really interesting is the way that no one wants to hear about it and will do anything to. So you could infer, like, well, what does this guy find really interesting that he won't otherwise talk about? Religion, like, he's big on it. So.
Right.
That makes sense. You could infer that.
And I would add that I noticed after I got a better handle on what Ian was about in the first year back in 2009, 2010, he began telling everybody, become aware of your words. He was doing a media ecology, a McLuhan level, asking people to become aware of the effects of their language, that it was a creative force, a technology that had all these incredible effects, and humans were walking around somnambulistic. So either Ian was picking up for me, and only learned it because I had that idea, or it is true. Maybe we could ask Ian. Ian, did you get that from me, or were you on that agenda already?
Well, we were just poking at it to see if it was if it was dead or not.
Good point. And you found out it was dead, right?
Mostly, yes.
Okay, we're just listening to Brian. He's been absent for many months, and he's been doing his homework, so if you tolerate, we welcome your response. But do you have some other quotes, Brian, about Fuller or McLuhan or anything else you were researching?
Well, I think I need to, especially now that Ian's around, I need to bring up this other issue I just learned about today that seems pretty serious, and it's at least it's an update on something I've gone on at length on this very program in the past, year and a half ago. I think it was during the Olympics or near then that I talked about the whole Colbert thing in 2009.
Right.
And without trying to get into any kind of summary of that, we can figure out how to go back and look at it if you want. But Colbert's new show, of course, debuted this week. I did not see it. And I didn't actually read any of the whatever accompanying direct stuff, but I certainly heard, because it was much talked about, that this show he was going to be as himself. He's not going to be in character. So it's going to be totally different. But then I was disturbed, as it was getting nearer, to learn that he was still going to be referring to himself as Stephen Colbert, which is his character's name. This whole joke was that wasn't his real name in the sense of it's spelled the same, like it's a very explicitly Joycean or Derridean joke on the keep the spelling of the name the same, but that the French pronunciation is Colbert, and he grew up a Colbert. So he's going to be playing this guy that's not himself. He changes the name a little bit, and it enables, kind of frictionlessly enables these other great jokes with the rapport being spelled report, but it's pronounced the word R-A-P-P-O-R-T, which is what he's doing with the media. Anyway, all this great stuff. But I thought the whole point was that he can put that down and take back his name and be, hi, I'm Stephen Colbert. Like, you know me as this insane person, but I'm Stephen Colbert. And so now we can build a relationship. But so anyway, I was disturbed. I'm like, okay, kind of weird. If he's just taking that casually, like what he's knitting right into the fabric of his identity in his interface with the mass media, he's going to take it so casually that way that, like, oh, yeah, that whole years-long ritual that I recently closed, the circle's still open because I'm still going to call myself that. No problem. I want to save people a tiny bit of confusion. It just seemed like, wow, that's reckless. I hope he's consciously doing something. You know, I could come up with some good excuses for that, like he's taking seriously the idea that being on the air at all, especially on a mass broadcast, totally obliterates your identity fundamentally, so he can't ever be Stephen Colbert on the air. He has to be Stephen Colbert.
The person. Now, are you, or the image, are you, did you say it was announced that he would not be his mask? He would be the private self, so to speak. Oh, did Brian get knocked off? Ion, you knocked him off, Ion.
Craziest live playing bullshit we ever heard in our whole life.
What's going
now,
on, Ion? Too many words, Ion?
Okay, so